Hi friends, welcome to the Fresh Life Podcast. My name is Leah Pieper and I'm so glad that you tuned in today. We are starting our first episode in the Redemption series, and we started this series because we all need to hear stories of God's faithfulness. It is something we see in the Bible of the Israelites reminding each other of how God has been faithful, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to tell stories of how God has been faithful to the women we know and love. So today we're diving into Cammie's story, and you guys are gonna love this episode. I think it highlights a time when Cammie's life felt so uncertain. She felt lonely, and it was a scary season of life, and God provided. He provided in such a perfect and beautiful way. I think you guys are gonna leave this episode worshiping Him for how He met Cammie and turned a story that felt so isolated into a family. Y'all understand that once Cammie starts telling her story. We're so excited for you to listen to her because she is so, so kind, and you can just feel the smile through her voice. I know you're gonna love her and the story. So let's just dive right in. Pull up a chair, guys.
Welcome back to the Fresh Life Podcast. This is Tara Wiekamp, and I'm sitting in Lisa's living room with Cammie Balla. And this brings me so much joy because Cammie comes from my neck of the woods. So we are here because we are doing a series called Redemption. And in this series, we're getting to hear women's stories about how God has taken times in their life or seasons where they felt like it might be desolate or devastated or dry. And God has taken those and redeemed them and restored them and brought life to them. And these are exciting stories, and they're fun to hear because I think every woman's story is just a little different. And we are able to, as we hear these stories, see a little bit of God in a new way or a new light, but also relate to these stories. And I think that's really fun. So I'm very honored to introduce you to Cammie because she is a person who, just when I first met her, I experienced God's love and grace and redemption as she told me bits of her story. And I think that this will be an opportunity for you guys to hear her story, but also for you to hear the work that God's done in her heart and her mind. One of the things that drew me to Cammie was that she sees that work not only in the big spaces in her life, but in the little spaces too. So it's really fun. So like we say often, this podcast is about actively shaping the next generation through life on life discipleship, and Cammie is all about that. Cammie homeschools her four kids, and she is our Awana director, which Awana is a group of kids who come together each week to learn the Word of God and to have fun together. And she is also actively involved in our church and Bible studies. And so in all these spaces, I get to see Cammie doing life on life and shaping the next generation, which is super fun. Can you tell us a little bit about your story, Cammie? Maybe start with where you're at now, but then I want to go back a little bit.
Okay. I'm married to Aaron. Our 15th wedding anniversary is coming up in December, but we've been together for quite a while longer than that. And we have four kids that, like you said, I homeschool. I've been active in our homeschool community as far as groups and mentoring new homeschool moms. And like I said, being the director of Awana this year is new. that's where I am today. We live on my husband's family's ranch. That's been where our kids are the fifth generation growing up on the ranch. And so that's, all very exciting parts of my life that at the beginning of this story, I wouldn't have seen. Starting at the beginning, I grew up in a small town in western Nebraska with my mom and dad and two younger sisters. We went to a Christian school growing up, and where we went to church every morning before we went to school. My mom was very active in the church and lots of Bible studies, and so were my grandmas were always around doing those kinds of things also. We weren't necessarily a prominent family in town, but we were a very known family in town. Both of my parents grew up there, so their extended families were also really well known, and everyone was very active in the community and our church. Mm-hmm. All of us kids were very watched growing up. Everyone knew us, and our parents, and aunts and uncles, and the entire family. and so there wasn't like a lot of secretness in a small town, as a lot of us know. And once I hit about middle school, I started making some poor choices in my life. And I do have a vivid memory of, we had a non-denominational youth group in town that I went to. And I remember, them doing an altar call, at one of those youth groups. And that was the night that I decided to go forward and give my life to Christ. But that didn't come immediately. In middle school, it was rough. And I started going down a poor path there. Kind of got back on track a little bit later between middle school and high school, and then really fell apart in high school. Just lots of poor choices. Lots of poor choices in friends. Just blatant disobedience to my parents regularly.
I remember you told me as we were driving, you were like, I knew the right things to do. I just was not doing them. And I was like, that is such a good way of describing that. It's like, it's not that you were unaware, but it was this moment of like, this is my choice.
Right. And this, I think I've said before, like I was a girl that would show up to the party and someone would say, is your mom coming? Because she came to get me every single week. Every single weekend she showed up somewhere to get me and take me home. And whether I was grounded or not, I always figured out this way to just blatantly defy her and my dad. And I think it was like, I look back now and I wonder if it was like my teenage need for control. It was something I could control. And even if it was a poor choice, it was something that it was my choice. And I was just walking this path of destruction. And I knew it. Everyone else knew it. But I had been on it for so long at that point that I didn't see a way off of it. So I was in bad relationships and just put myself in a lot of bad situations. And at the very start of my senior year, I found out I was pregnant. And I knew right away when I told Brooke's birth dad, when I went and met him at work and waited for him to come out on break, and I handed him my positive pregnancy test, and he just said, what are you going to do? And to anyone else that you probably wouldn't have stood out like it did to me in that moment, but that's basically all I heard was, what are you going to do? And I knew in that moment that it was me, that I was the one responsible for this life. And it was just this turning point right then. And I'm not angry with him or mad at him. I want to be really clear about that. I mean, we were 17-year-old kids. I don't blame him at all for that. But it was just that moment of like, he wasn't ready and neither was I, but I was going to have to get ready at some point to make some decisions for this baby. And early on, I mean, obviously it was a small town. A lot of rumors going around surrounding it. Of course, people were talking about me behind my back. I was a cheerleader and on the show choir. And so I was very in the public in those aspects also. And I remember being asked to step down off of the cheerleading squad and several other places that I was active in school. And I didn't right away. Once I started showing more, and I was actually had enough credits that I was able to graduate a semester. So I was able to be done at Christmas break that year. But so I did step down off of some of those things later, but I just remember those like looks and the comments and the shame surrounding it. And while I always knew that there was like value in this life that I was carrying and that it was in fact a life that I was carrying and this just heavy responsibility for that life. And I knew that that was there, but there was also this huge cloud of shame around me, not just for myself, but for my younger sisters and my parents. And I have talked about this before, but my dad and I have always been really close growing up. I was the first of the daughters and just his first baby, and we've just always been close. And he was very upset when he found out that I was pregnant. And I now, as an adult looking back, I know he wasn't really upset with me. He was upset with the situation and he was heartbroken for me. Mm-hmm. And as a mom now, like I look back and I know that that comes across as anger, mm-hmm. just because of situations with my kids and with Brooke now later in life that sometimes comes out that way. And so I know that with him now, mm-hmm. but we didn't really have a real conversation for several months, when I was pregnant. And I remember the first time that we actually talked again was when I first could start feeling the baby move. And my younger sister was about 14 at the time, and she was so excited. And I remember her running upstairs to tell everyone. And I remember my dad coming down and like experiencing that with me. And that was like our first conversation again, from the time that I'd told them that I was pregnant, was him coming down to feel the baby move. And him and I have never talked about that since. But that was that moment for me that I felt like I'd lost this connection with all of these people in my life because I just let them down so much. And my mom had mentioned adoption to me and I was very angry. Like, how in the world could you even think that I would want to give my baby away? I guess was the way that I thought about it at that point. But as the months kind of progressed and I really started thinking about things, I was working at the Holiday Inn Express and I cleaned rooms and during the day and I worked the front desk in the evenings. And I was sitting there by myself one night and I was opening all the boxes for the magazines that used to go in the rooms. I think that's been a while since that happened, so I'm probably dating myself. But I was opening all these boxes of things that needed to go, of the magazines that needed to go into the rooms. And I remember hearing this voice. I thought someone was behind me that just said to me, "This baby is not for you." And I remember turning around because I thought someone was behind me. And as I was opening these magazines, I always read them because I was by myself and it was boring at the front desk. And so I opened this magazine up and at the top there was like a heading on one of the pages that said, "Was it really a voice I heard or was it just something inside of me knowing that this was the right thing to do?" And that in that moment, I was like, okay, well, this baby's not for me, but who is this baby for? And in the months that followed, once people's words kind of started getting around that I was considering adoption, we were getting things in the mail and people calling my mom and dad's house and offering me money and cars and college educations, and not like small amounts of money, like $100,000 was one of the offers. And I remember that my response just kind of started being like, well, she's not for sale. And I didn't ever find out whether the baby was a boy or a girl. I just always knew that it was a girl. And I would tell everyone that, no, it's a girl. Well, how do you know? I just know. And I just knew from the beginning. And I would just say, she's not for sale. And I would hang up. But it was like incessant. It was just all of the time. And then when I was about 7 months pregnant, my mom had called a caseworker from Nebraska Children's Home and she brought another birth mom and they came to our home and talked to us. And I was still pretty hesitant to this idea even. But I talked to her and asked her some questions and she told me her story, and which now looking back, I couldn't tell you a detail about that. I think I just completely checked out at that point. But I remember them coming and leaving and my mom talking to me afterwards and being like, well, what did you think? Whatever. And I said, nope. Mm-hmm. And because I was having such a struggle around town, my aunt had actually gone back to work. And so I went to Colorado to help nanny for her while she was working for her kids. And my littlest cousin, their youngest, was just in preschool. So him and I had a lot of time to hang out. And it was that part of it was wonderful. But I went and nannied for her and all of that. And when I finally decided to come home, my best friend in high school, when we were about 14, she had to have a surgery to have one of her ovaries removed because she just had some issues with all of that. And she wanted like nothing more in life than to be a mom, even at 13 or 14 years old. And I was like, I'm never having kids. I do not want to do that. And so we were like these polar opposites. Well, while I was pregnant with Brooke, she ended up having to have that her second ovary removed. Mm-hmm. And I remember that this like torn feeling for both of us, because she was going through this like devastation of knowing that she'd never be able to have her own biological children. And here I was like not wanting to be pregnant even in any sense of the word and having no idea what I was going to do. And that really grew us through that situation also. But so I thought when she had to have her second surgery is when I came home. And so she spent the last part of my pregnancy, a lot of it with me. And I had another friend that her and I had a Tuesday night date night where we would go out to eat together and go to the movies because it was 2-for-1 night. So her and I would do that every single Tuesday night. And so I had a couple of those friends that really carried me through that time, which looking back, I don't know how I could have put up or dealt with, like really dealt with the judgment and those things surrounding all of this. Nebraska Children's Home had their potential adoptive families had profiles, and they would tell you about themselves and put some pictures in there. And I had this whole list. Once I finally decided on adoption, I had this whole list of things I did want and a whole list of things that I didn't.
Share a little bit about what was on your list. So at 17, you're making some decisions about like, hey, this is where my little girl is going to go. What's on your list?
My list was I didn't want them to have other children. I wanted someone who was unable to have their own biological children. I wanted someone who had a faith. I wanted them to have a regular church and a church family. And that was a really big one for me. And I just something I said from the beginning was I just want her to have two parents. And I grew up with my mom and dad were high school sweethearts and now have been together, you know, for over 40 years. And so I had all of these like little details of like, just those, like, I wanted to have faith, no other kids. I wanted them to like be active in the outdoors. I wanted, you know, I just had, and now some of it looking back, I'm like, well, some of that was very silly. And some of it I can't even remember, but I had this list and I was going through all of these profiles, and the ones I didn't want were so easy to pick out just right off the top. I would like read it and I'd be like, whatever. And my family and I had kind of come to this agreement where like everyone reads it, no one says anything till we're all done. And so we would all read all these profiles and then everyone would kind of start throwing their opinions out on things. And I never like felt settled with any of them. And finally, it was just me and my 14-year-old sister at home. And I opened the envelope and I knew it was from them. And there was a sticky note on the top that said, this is the last of the profiles in the state of Nebraska. If you don't find someone that you'd like to meet here, we can start looking in neighboring states. And I'm like, okay. So Kelsey and I read them all and we kind of go back and forth a little bit. I'm just like waiting for her to finish because I knew about this family that I just read about. So she finished and she just looks up at me with tears in her eyes and she goes, it's them. And I was like, I agree. So we ran down to go tell my mom. She was helping a friend at her greenhouse. And we go running across the parking lot. And just like, I was so excited to like finally have found someone. And so the morning after my senior prom, I met Sally and Tim. And we sat in the office at Nebraska Children's Home in North Platte and just visited, like we had known each other forever. And I remember leaving and saying to my mom, I know I've made the right decision and I feel at peace. And then I slept the rest of the way home. And that was when I was 6 weeks from my due date. And so then, my high school graduation was coming up. I was due with Brooke, but I was just a tad overdue. And it was to that point where I was like, well, I guess I'm not having this baby before graduation. And, I was in the grocery store one night and like I said, I grew up in a small town. So there was like a lot of people that I had gone to school with from kindergarten through high school. And there was two women standing in an aisle and I knew both of them. I'd gone to school with their kids And as I was walking down the next aisle, I heard one of them say, "I just can't imagine how embarrassed her parents must be and how hard this has been on them." And I heard the other one say, "We were in a similar situation, but that was taken care of before it got to this point." And I remember just being like heartbroken. Like, I knew this person, you know, like I'd known her for years, and for them to be speaking about me that way and to be even speaking about their own children in the manner that they were speaking in that aisle. I was a very, very shy kid. I was the one standing behind my mom's leg because I didn't want anyone to talk to me, because I didn't want to have to talk back to them. And so even in high school, I was still very much that way. And so I remember just like walking around that aisle and just saying, "Actually, my mom and dad are not ashamed of me. This is a hard situation, but they're not ashamed of me. And this baby is going to make two people who couldn't be parents." And then I just walked back down the other aisle and went about my shopping. And I ended up walking the stage at graduation the next week, and my dad was just training for a new job, so he could only come home every third weekend. So he came home for my graduation, which he knew then he wasn't going to be home when I had the baby. And looking back, God definitely had that in his plan, because I don't think that had my dad been there, I don't think I would have been able to do it. And I think he would have said, "No, we'll figure it out, and we're not going to do this." So God obviously had his hand in that part, but he did call, right? Like just seconds after she was born. And so I was able to talk to him on the phone for just a minute. And then I had a lot of complications. And I just remember my mom taking the phone from me and saying, "I'm going to have to call you back," and hanging up on him. And which had to have been very hard, because he was far away and there's just no way that he's going to get there. But obviously he knew something was wrong. And I have a vivid memory of looking up and feeling horrible, and looking up and seeing that my pulse rate was at like 254 and my blood pressure was just dropping because I'd started to hemorrhage after I had the baby. And I remember my sister asking if I was going to die, and like just like all these little like snippets of things. And I didn't wake up for like 12 hours after this, after that point. And I remember waking up and my grandma was sitting in the corner of my room, my mom's mom. And she was just the sweetest lady. But grandma was sitting in the corner of the room, and I woke up and she asked me how I was and whatever. And I said, "Well, I'd really like to see the baby." And one of the nurses was in there, and she's like, "I'm going to have to ask if that's okay." And I was like, "No, because it's my baby and I would like to see her." And she was gone for quite a while. And all of a sudden, this woman comes through the door holding the baby. And she sits down on the bed next to me, and she hands Brooke to me. And she said, her name's Kim, and we've reconnected since this, which is a whole nother story. But she handed me Brooke, and she said, "I was adopted. And I never got to meet my birth mom, but they always told me that she held me before she gave me up. And I've just carried that with me because I always knew that it was that she didn't do what she did because she didn't want me." And so her and I talked for quite a while, and she, I held Brooke, she held Brooke. And that was just, it confirmed for me that I was making the right decision. And so I kept her as much as they would let me keep her in the room. And my friend, that had the ovary, had to have her ovaries removed, came to the hospital. And I still have a picture of the two of us laying in my hospital bed with Brooke in the middle. And just for her, I can't imagine how hard that was for her at that point. We were both experiencing really hard stuff on the opposite ends of the spectrum. And we had planned to have a dedication ceremony. Sally and Tim also showed up at the hospital and brought me this huge basket of like clothes or of gift cards for clothes and just some other stuff in it, because while I was pregnant, my sister's had raided my closet, and I had told Sally that. And so they showed up at the hospital with these gift cards to clothing stores around and just all sorts of stuff in there for me, and came to meet my family and my friends and all of the things, you know. And at that point, they also knew that I could have backed out at that moment, even after all of that. But they came and they spent time with us and then had to leave and go back to their hotel room, you know, and just wait. Mm-hmm. And so the next morning, we had a dedication ceremony, and my grandma is actually the one that did the dedication ceremony. My other grandma, my dad's mom. And at one point she said, you know, Brooke is like, it's kind of like Cammie's sending Brooke down the river in a basket, just like Moses' mother. And Sally's the one plucking her out of the water. And I, that's just something I've really carried with me all this time. And at the very end of everything, I went to give Brooke to Sally, that like physical handing over of the baby, and she wouldn't take her. And we're both crying. And later looking back, like I realized she couldn't take her because she knew what my pain was going to be because she'd already experienced it. And other, you know, with her negative pregnancy tests and all of those things that were just, she knew what my pain was going to be. And in our short time that we'd known each other, just those 6 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks that we'd known each other, she already loved me and she didn't want me to feel that. So she wouldn't take her right away. And I kind of just had to like push her into her arms. And they ended up leaving and taking her home. And my mom and I were both just completely exhausted. They didn't discharge Brooke until they also discharged me from the hospital. So I wasn't there without her. And my mom and I went home, and all of the air mattresses and things from graduation were still up in the basement when we got home, and it's dark and cool down there. So my mom and I both just went down there. We both just went to sleep, and it had to have been 12 hours when we got home from the hospital. And I remember waking up that night and just asking her to please go get her. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Can you please just go get her? And I remember she just said, I can't. I wish I could, but I can't. And her and I just crying together. And then when Brooke was a week old, my dad hadn't gotten to meet her yet. And so Sally and Tim met us in Kearney. And Sally had a class reunion that weekend. So we had like these awkward moments with her classmates of trying to explain our situation right off the bat. So we've just, in all of those experiences, we've just learned from the beginning to be very open with our story. I had no idea what open adoption even was at the beginning of all of this, but Sally and Tim have just like opened that door really wide for me and my family to be a part of Brooke's life, and now also her little sister's life. And because they adopted another little girl when Brooke was four. And we've just had this like beautiful relationship of where we have been able to connect in ways that I would never connect with other people in my life. Just this like unspoken understanding of one another, and welcoming each other into our families and just expanding our families.
I love that. One of the things I remember striking me when you were talking about just your relationship with Sally and Tim is how unique it was, and how even like the way that they opened that door for you, I think started that redemptive process.
Yeah.
So quickly. And yep. Just the way that you were able to engage Brooke as their daughter, you've talked about that, instead of saying, you know, this is my daughter who they're raising. I think you just really allowed those lines and those definitions to be drawn and let God just kind of enter into the heart. I mean, like you and your mom laying in your basement after you get home to the hospital, like I can't even imagine that. And so I just think like in those hard places, your experience is probably unique, but it's so beautiful because I think it's so clear how God was in that and redeeming it and using Sally and Tim and using just things. So what are some of the things that you now looking back see those pieces where he was clearly causing that redemptive process to begin or clearly kind of ministering to your heart?
I think, you know, one of those things was that meeting, right, at that early on meeting with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I cried all the way home from that meeting of them so that my dad could meet Brooke. And, but I think that that also gave me the ability to, when people would say to me that didn't know that I had mm-hmm. placed Brooke for adoption, when they would say to me in the community, like, well, where's your baby? And I would say with her parents. Mm-hmm. And that got some looks, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, well, I placed the baby for adoption. And that gave me a lot of space to explain that to people, because I think adoption in and of itself has had such like a stigma and a shroud of secrecy around it. And where I think one of those redemptive things was just the ability to have it in the light. Mm-hmm. You know, like we all always talk about things that fester in the dark, mm-hmm. But when they're brought to light, they can be healed, you know? And I think that's one of the biggest lessons for me in all of this, mm-hmm. was that could have stayed in the dark for a lot longer than it did. But we just from the beginning started shining light on the whole situation and being very transparent and honest about it wasn't easy. It was very hard. There was a lot of tears and sometimes anger and... you know, I mean, like when Sally would call and say Brooke cut her first teeth or mm-hmm. she started walking, or those were hard. Those mm-hmm. were hard moments for me, but she was always also so understanding, as well as the building of relationships, and restoring of relationships. Mm-hmm. I think those are, areas of redemption that I really, now looking back, see a lot more vividly than I did back then. Like then I was just like, okay, well, it's okay now. But now looking back, I know that that was God redeeming all of these little pieces along the way.
So one of the things that I think as you tell your story, was in my heart was just the, what did you learn about God and how your parents engaged you in that time? Or like, I feel like so much of who we think God is shaped by how our parents engage us. And I feel like in your story, even that, like you were able to lean into your parents at sometimes you were able to feel that like distance at a moment when you were like, feeling like I just let my dad down, all those things. How did your parents help shape your view of God through this?
I think, you know, as kids, we grow up thinking that God's like this list of rules. I think that's the easier way to think of God. He's this list of rules and things we're not supposed to do. And I think that that's something that even as a parent now, like I really have to think about, like not only teaching that part of God to my kids. And I think my parents really showed me that grace and mercy side of God. And like you said, that separation. We've all had those moments where we felt really separated from God. And this was one of those times in my life where I have messed up on a level that is very public. And this is something else I always say. Sometimes we get to live with our sins like in private with God. It can just be us and Him. And those are like, I feel like a little bit more comfortable for me, at least. They're just like a little bit more comfortable that like, that's something Him and I know, but no one else does. And this was a very public sin that I had to deal with. And for my mom and dad to just show that grace and mercy and understanding, and the, while they didn't agree with my decisions, the ability to just come alongside me and like nudge me back to where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, I love that. That is so beautiful too. You know, just that you got to experience that aspect of who God was through your parents, which is also unique. Like God's given you a unique story. So after you had Brooke, then you started this whole new journey that would have been very different had you chose to keep her and raise her. Yeah. And you met Aaron.
Yep.
And you got married. Yes. And you had some kids. And so one of the things that I would love to hear is what God has taught you recently in this, it's not a new life, but it's this walk of life. You're raising four kids with Aaron on the ranch. And I'm sure that how God has brought you through your story has shaped the mom you are today, has shaped all these things. But like, what has He taught you through your story because of what you walk through that applies to your current season?
I think he's taught me that grace piece for sure. That it's easy to look at people's lives from the outside and form an opinion or think that things are a certain way. But he's given me that ability to have the grace to understand that maybe that's not how it actually looks. Mm-hmm. It's really easy for us to, and also for me, not to always just set up my white picket fence with my perfectly manicured lawn for people, mm-hmm. To have that transparency, because I think that that's where we build relationships and really get to know people. And the other thing would be that we're never actually alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live in the middle of nowhere, and so it's easy to feel very lonely mm-hmm. in that place, and especially in all these years of having little babies, there were very lonely times. And just knowing that he is always there and focusing my eyes to see that he is there, because it's sometimes easy to get that broader vision and not focus on him mm-hmm. and where he is in my day-to-day life.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Cammie. I think one of the things too that I just love about you is that you live these principles. I think of your relationship with Kelly and how like you've learned to lean on others and you've learned to trust people who are around you. And I think that just all of that makes such a beautiful depiction of God in your life. And it shines in our community. I can guarantee you that for sure. So I really appreciate you making the trip down with me, which is so fun because we got to drive 3 hours and just chit chat all the way. But really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you guys join us again next week.
What a beautiful story. You guys, I loved listening to Cammie and Tara talk about just this season of Cammie getting pregnant and working that out with her family and her community and just watching God provide every step of the way, especially with the parents who adopted Brooke. I think this is a story that highlights God's power and just his kindness amidst a season that could have been marked by isolation, but instead the Lord brought Cammie people that met with her, took her on dates, and her family that stood by her, helped her pick the family that would be raising this baby. Such a beautiful story. And even after Brooke is with her new family, how the Lord just provided Cammie with her mom as a source of, we're in this together. I'm going to walk with you. Just so many beautiful redeeming parts amidst the whole story. I love this story and it makes me worship God because of his kindness amidst a season where Cammie could have said, nope, I'm not going to listen to the Lord when he said that this child is not for me. I'm going to do what I want. But she, in trust and in obedience, said, I'm going to follow you, God, amidst this. So beautiful. And I'm so glad you guys were here to listen to it. We've got so many more beautiful stories coming your way in the next few weeks. And I can't wait to watch how the Lord uses these in your life. We think that these episodes are so important. And these stories remind us of the faithfulness of God, the character of who our God is, and bring us to a place where we can remember and reflect and worship. All right, guys, we'll see you back here next week for another redemption story. I'll see you then.